again to welcome a member of the intervention task team, which was the Minister of Education of the day. Without waste of time, I think a member of the team was in the land, trying to digest those answers. At the same time, we have quite a huge task before us to end this afternoon. Yesterday, during the portfolio committee meeting with the provincial managers, which is a normal practice that the committee sort of develop a tool in which we are able to measure the work that is done by the department through the provincial managers. That interaction yesterday sort of brought again to light a number of challenges and some successes that the department has managed to achieve, and those challenges that the department should have to deal with. Therefore, we have made just a summary of the issues for members of the committee to sort of look at and to make decisions so that in the next round when the committee meets, we will be able to sort of develop our program informed by some of the outstanding challenges. What I want to raise is that during our last meeting with provincial managers, a number of recommendations were made through that interaction and through the portfolio committee visits to all the 9 provinces. I'm happy again to announce that most of the recommendations that the committee has made directly with provincial managers, almost half of those recommendations have been implemented by provincial managers. Just to make one example of the recommendations that we have made, was that there must be an Office of Home Affairs in Mlazi, KwaZulu-Natal. The process is already underway, as it was reported yesterday, that the department is really working very hard with the public works to try, and they've already identified a place and every single thing, I think, which would lead to the building of the office is being sort of there. But obviously, the bigger challenge came up on the question of the shortage of staff, whereby most of the provinces operate under 50% of the staff complement. I think it's one of the challenges which impact directly on service delivery. The call that they state during the State of the Nation, when the President said that this year Home Affairs, with the resources that were given to Home Affairs, will be to speed up a appointment of the officials who will come in and address all the challenges that the department is faced with, at the same time as providing semi-ordinary people. I think that call stands, and therefore we need to focus our energy much in making sure that we help the department to arrive at that goal of making sure that all provinces are in good footing, well-resourced, with almost a 100% complement of their staff for them to be able to deliver service to the citizens. The other challenge that came out was the issue of the IT, which is still a problem, but obviously there are progress in some of the areas, but the linkage of to the mainstream, I think, is still one area that provincial managers have raised, which I would believe that when we interact with the department during their annual report with the DDGs responsible for some of these areas, we'll be able to get answers. The issue of the mobile units, that half of the mobile units are broken down, it's a call for concern. And then we yesterday sort of resolved that we are going to engage with the department and the service providers on that particular area, because this initiative, when the minister launched this initiative, was to address the challenge that we have been calling for quite some time of Home Affairs reaching out to the people. And that call received quite very good warm hands from the minister when she launched those mobile units. But clearly that there are problems. Most of half of the mobile units are broken down. So that so therefore we need to urgently look at this matter. Because most of these mobile units are hardly 5,000 kilometers and are broken down and all of that. But I think together with the department we'll be able, with the help of the minister, we'll be able to address some of the challenges. I thought it's important before we receive this report just to highlight some of the challenges that the department is still facing and the number of successes in areas that the department has already sort of put more energy to try and address some of the issues. Therefore, you'll recall then, members, that during the last budget event on the 30th of this month, we supported the call that the minister made that with all the problems that Home Affairs confronted with, and which most of these problems were not new problems. Some of us who have served in this committee from 1994 will tell you that since from the beginning of the formation of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs by Parliament, we have been dealing with problems, quite very serious problems. And for the past 10 years, we have been knocking on the doors of those who are in charge to say, as the Committee of Parliament, we believe that these are the issues that they have identified. Therefore, we need you, Minister, Director General, to address these issues. But you know, the issues that I do not want to repeat, a situation where we have more than four Director Generals that came and left in that period. And clearly, a plan of action never came out clear from the Department of Home Affairs. Because by the time you get the new Director General comes with his own program, when he lived within a year or 2 years, before he even realized the objectives that he had set up, another Director General comes in. Now, that was being like the bold and the beautiful for quite some time. Now, when the committee met, we had to deal with the politics again of Kwazulu Natal, where the IFP, the ANC, and all of that. That was happening in the Portfolio Committee. This is what we're dealing with most of the time. And the department was operating without even top management for quite a long, 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 long time. The coming in of the minister, Mabita Nakula, came in at a time when we were in fact at the verge of collapsing. But we saw the appointment of top senior management, who today most of them have resigned again. The cause for concern that we have to look at. So I would believe that what we are going to deal with today, what we are going to receive, has been an area that we have supported, we have even made a contribution as a committee, that as the minister made this call, we want to put our voice as a committee and make additional recommendations for the intervention task team to look at. We met for the first time with the intervention task team. We agree that on a monthly basis, on a 7 month, on a quarterly basis, there will be an update of the development. But that did not happen. We decided at some point that let's leave them and focus on other things because we understand the challenges that we're faced with. Today, we have had already pronouncement from the minister on the issue of the report. We have not yet received a copy of the report. What we have received yesterday was a summary which was presented to the Committee of Ministers. And I believe that members, through this summary, they have sort of went through and have some kind of an understanding of the findings of the intervention that team. But members have not yet looked at the final report, which today is going to be presented to us, led by the minister, for us to understand the challenges, action, programs of action. Because at the end of the day, this report should help us to understand the problems that Home Affairs. In the State of the Nation address, the President said, the recommendations of the task team must be implemented. We have not yet seen the recommendations, other than those that we see here. But our interaction today will help us to really understand that this was the finding of the trust, in which we know that they have done quite tremendous work in trying to address some of the challenges. Not only identifying problems, but they have tried to resolve some of the challenges during their work. And therefore, I think it's unfortunate that members for the first time will be receiving a report in this format of a final report. But at the same time, emphasize that the summary that we received yesterday sort of brought some light to us, and therefore we then accordingly afford the minister now an opportunity to present to us this portfolio committee on Home Affairs that said that we are not able to proceed with the budget process unless we understand what are the issues within the Department of Home Affairs. And therefore this opportunity is now given to the minister. We'll listen carefully, we'll know, and then we'll obviously have a way forward as to how we move forward after that presentation. And therefore thank you very much, members, for listening to me. I know that if you don't stop me, I'll not stop. But therefore, minister, we then afford you this opportunity now to present to the portfolio committee the intervention testing report.
Thank you, Chair Sessom. And thank you, honourable members, for affording us this opportunity to present this report, which is the final report of the intervention task force. And the report which has been presented to the Committee of Ministers and Cabinet for approval, whose recommendation has since been approved by the Cabinet. From the onset, allow me to thank the Portfolio Committee Chairperson for your indulgence and your patience in allowing us time to process the report of the support intervention survey through the executive before presenting it. I'm aware of your own anxiety, given the number of issues you have raised with us regarding mental that the task team has in the past been dealing with. Today we present this committee the outcome of the work of the support intervention team that has been working within our department for a period of 6 months during last year. As honorable members will recall, during my previous budget vote speech to the National Assembly, I had raised concerns over the problems inherent in our systems and structures that were frustrating the efficient functioning of the department as well as service delivery priorities. Some of these problems have been highlighted in the report of 2004-2005 of the Auditor General as well as in the observations by this committee. In my view, it was always clear that the serious as the issues raised by the Auditor General were, they presented symptoms of a much more deep-rooted problem in both organizations and operational structures systems of the department. Such issues raised by the Auditor General's report needed to be addressed is part of the comprehensive transformation of the department. As I said before in my address to this committee and elsewhere publicly, the transformation process we envisage would need to cover all aspects of our work, ensuring integrated solutions and clearly determining which of these were quick wins to be achieved in the short term and which ones were more medium to long term. It would cover areas such as capacity, which you alluded to, both human and infrastructure, business processes within the department, organizational design, service delivery models, supply chain management, as well as support systems, including technology. It was, however, necessary that before we do this work, we needed to be sure of ourselves about what it was that needed to be changed or improved in our country. It was for this reason, therefore, that we invited the support intervention task team from DPSA and National Treasury and the Public Service Commission to come into the department and conduct an investigation of our systems and business. Of course, this was not the first time that support teams have come to the Department of Home Affairs. For this reason, was necessary that this particular intervention had to be different, both in terms of its focus and the impact its work will make within the department. What we require, Chairperson and honorable members, was an intervention that will not only help us to deal with some of the immediate problems, but one that will provide us with sustainable solutions covering our entire organization. The support intervention was categorized into five focus areas that needed to be strengthened. These focus areas and their specific objectives were as follows: leadership and management, to establish a stronger and cohesive management team. B, human resources, to provide focused support to particular human resource management issues. 3, information and communication technology, to provide support to information and communication technology management methods. Service delivery, to strengthen service delivery improvement initiatives. And lastly, financial management, to improve our financial management and internal control. And you needed to conduct an investigation in order for us to come up with a recommendation which has been provided to us by the intervention system. Additional to this, the team has also looked at some of the current challenges that the department faces with regard to systems and processes in each one of the areas of the change of reference. As per our undertaking, the team presented its initial observations to this committee a few months after starting their work in October last year. And we further committed ourselves to come back and brief the committee and parliament on the outcome of the work of the team Before we make a detailed presentation of this report, I need to say the following broad points on the transformation of the department. Firstly, that due to its role in the success of government programs as a catalyst for access to services, there is always a need for the Department of Home Affairs to function an efficient machinery that ensures that its mandate is not frustrated. Ours is one of the government departments that, despite major changes to its mandate under a democratic government, its organizational structure and design have remained unchanged. It is a vast organization with all its processes centralized at national level, with inadequate operational capacity at regional and local level. As we assume leadership of the department, we found that the department lacked selected leadership and input, with over 70% of the then establishment comprising clerical officials up to level. The infrastructure of the department was never improved or increased to ensure more convenient access to services by all its clients, particularly those in the room. Technology infrastructure was virtually non-existent, with a lot of key systems being old and needed an upgrading or replacement. This is the environment within which transformation of the department needs to happen. Ours is an attitude that recognizes that, as the current leadership of the department, we are the ones to shoulder the responsibility to address the problem. It is not important for us to deal with who created them and when, but that the leadership of the department should take collective responsibility to find the solution. This we owe to the public. In looking at the report of the support intervention, therefore, we will want to take those recommendations that we can ensure that impact of service delivery improvement is felt in our front line of work. I've already indicated that one of the things that we need to do urgently is to appoint a new director general for the department. I've also decided to bring a team of experts from outside the department to come in and help with the implementation plan for the recommendations emanating from it. The work of this team, working under the new DG, will also help to further streamline the business plan of the department going into the next medium-term expenditure framework period, in line with this recommendation. One of the key things that we shall require the team to focus on in the meeting is the feasibility on the reconfiguration of the department, including the finalization of the necessary organizational model and structure. The government issues with regard to the financial management within the department also need to be addressed as a matter of urgency, and the recommendations around changes in our budget process will be discussed with the National Treasurer. will need to bring in further capacity to assist us in the implementation of the HR-related recommendations, including most evidently the feeding of funders maintained post in the establishment. Let me say, Chairperson, that I've noted reports in the media about what we are going to do with the outcome of the competence test that were conducted for senior managers within the department. I have received the report on the competence test, as well as a number of other observations regarding the state of management in the department. All these reports require that the proper corrective actions be taken. The nature of the actions that we shall take will obviously differ from case to case. Members are aware that we work within specific legal and administrative frameworks guiding the nature of corrective measures that can be applied in different cases. What I can assure you, however, is that in all cases, proper corrective measures that we have at our disposal will be utilized. Whatever we do, at the end of it all, should assist us to gain the necessary capacity required at leadership level to turn the department around. This principle we cannot compromise. We'll obviously provide reports in this regard as and when we are required to be patient. The challenge that now remains with us is the way forward now that we have results. We've now received this recommendation from the team, and we are appealing to you to give us time to implement them. We will come back to you by the time of our budget vote to report on the progress we have made in implementation. Members of the task team are here with me to assist with the presentation of the report and some of the recommendations. And before I hand over to the task team, I need to thank members of the Portfolio Committee for the support you've given us during the work of this team, and for the sharp manner in which you raised your concerns each time you interacted with our offices and the people on the ground. We believe that this continued support will also be necessary as we proceed with implementation. I must also thank both the Ministers of Public Service and Administration and Finance, as well as members of the Support Intervention Task Team, for the work they've done and the support they have given. I must also thank officials of the department for the cooperation they've given to this work. I am aware that this would not have been for them. Allow me, Chair, before I introduce the team, which you all know. To respond to the issue of the report. And I want to say, Chair, this is the report which we are presenting to the Portfolio Committee. This is the report which we have presented to the Committee of Ministers. This is the report and not a summary of what has been discussed, but a report which has been provided to the Cabinet for approval. The report because when we were going preparing to present the report to cabinet, we did not present the entire detail of what has come out. I'm not saying in terms of findings and recommendations, but I'm talking about the detail in terms of the content of the report. We believe that this is an internal report. We believe that if given the space and the time to implement the recommendations which have been made, and I want to say that all recommendations which are contained in the report of the intervention campaign are the recommendations which are going to be presented to the Portfolio Committee. So there are no recommendations which have led out of the process which are not being presented to the Portfolio Committee. Equally, there are no findings which have been made by the intervention campaign which are not being presented to the Portfolio. Allow me, therefore, to introduce Ms. Odette Ramsing, the VP of the OPSC, who is the one who was leading the intervention in the department. And you will recall that she is the one who was co-managing together with the VP Home Affairs at the initial stages of the intervention. Mr. Freeman Nombalo, who is Accountant General from the National Treasury, who will also make a presentation on the initial findings of the finance report. Because that part of the work has not been completed, because a lot of work has gone into it, and there's still a lot of work which will go into it. Because I do not want to come here and present half truth. I want to come here and present what is the expression of what has been finding of the information. So, through you, Chair, I beg the Minister that we will not be able to give you the complete and the final report on the finances because of the ongoing work which is in the department by the team from National Treasury and the Auditor General. However, I also noted some of the issues which emerged out of the report of the provincial managers yesterday. And I just want to say that at that point we interact when necessary on those issues. But I do want to say to the portfolio committee that the portfolio committee should remember that the reason why we called for an intervention, support intervention in the department, it was because we needed this kind of investigation, including areas which were identified yesterday, without which we would not be able to move forward in the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister. I want to firstly start off. He would have liked to be here this afternoon, but unfortunately he's in Brussels. He has been to represent him, Commissioner Madaj, who is a commissioner based in the Western Cape and with the Public Service Commission.
I'm going to present the final report on the support intervention in the Department of Home Affairs. I will give quickly the background of the support intervention, the observations made, many of which were presented to yourself, the progress against the work plan in the four areas that the Minister spoke about, and the Accountant General will give progress in relation to the fifth area, that is financial management. I'd like to comment on some of the strategic considerations and recommendations and then conclude. As you know, the Minister of Home Affairs has indicated in our budget vote that she was enlisting external assistance. A support intervention team went into the department in July. The team consisted of the Office of the Public Service Commission, the Department of Public Service and Administration, as well as the Accountant General. And together with the Department of Home Affairs, we embarked on a collaborative effort to address these challenges. And support was provided from the period July to December 2006. The areas, as mentioned by the Minister, leadership and management, human resources, information and communication technology, service delivery and financial management. We submitted a progress report to the Committee of Ministers in September 2006. This report was primarily based on the observations of the team, challenges identified and interventions embarked upon, and of course the progress that we had made between the period July to September 2006. This final report of the team mainly focuses on the strategic considerations and recommendations emanating from the support intervention. It does, however, reflect on the progress that has been achieved since the commencement of the support intervention team. As the Minister had indicated, we were focusing on certain quick wins in order to assist the department, but at the same time looking at the medium and long-term interventions that would be necessary to bring about the required turnaround within the department. Over and above about the report that was submitted. A number of comprehensive reports have been submitted to the Minister in terms of a whole list of areas that we actually look in a much more in-depth way. The Minister has commented on some of those reports. And these reports contain specific recommendations on collective action to be taken by the Minister as well as by the Department. The consolidated report is based, among others, on the findings that we have made in these individual reports. If you look at the area of leadership and management, one of the key focus areas, the lack of strategic leadership and management capability continues to be a fundamental challenge that faces this Department. The Department still lacks a cohesive management team that is capable of driving its transformation agenda and is also able to contain its change objectives to lower levels in the organization. There still needs to be a much more urgency and adherence to deadlines in dealing with matters, and there is a general crisis response to problems due to a lack of adequate management plan. However, during the time that we did work with the Department, clearly, managers have developed a better understanding of the strategic and operational challenges facing the Department. The real challenge is, will this understanding bring about the kind of solutions that are needed to some of the problems? And also, the level of reporting by managers on program performance has improved. During the time that we did work in the Department, there were certain achievements that were made, progress that was made against the work plan. For example, at the time that we came in, the portfolio committee, yourself, were very concerned about the thinness of the 2006-2007 business plan, and the team immediately worked towards strengthening that and submitting it by the due date that you had given, which had been a month from the time we had entered the Department. A number of key broad and business unit meetings were held to really understand the functions of the Department. Our interaction within the Department was really to try and get a much deeper understanding of the processes and systems and the environment that is either hindering or is an obstacle to the kind of service delivery that the Department needs to deliver. Financial disclosure forms were signed by all managers for the 2005-2006 financial year. I think an area that managers must be commended on, given that for the previous 3 years, no financial disclosure forms have been signed in this Department. So clearly, not only did they start complying, but you saw compliance of 100% taking place. The spending and claim for international travel for the 2005-2006 financial year was assessed. The assessment identified a general trend whereby officials submitted incomplete claims, where there was not inadequate internal controls, and also made recommendations to recover funds in the case of overpayment, and for the Minister to consider taking disciplinary action in some instances around the abuse of claims for international travel. Performance agreements of SMS members for the three financial years as reflected there. This report was presented to COFA. It was indicated in this report that there appears to be no regard for the due date by which PA should be concluded, and that PA was climbed well into the financial year, and even beyond the particular financial year, thereby undermining performance management. However, 2005-2006 saw a completely different picture. When we went in, we had a situation that within a month of us being there, the senior members of the Department had all signed their performance assessment for that period. In terms of the appointment of SMS members during the period 2004-2005, 2006, the intervention team looked at 54 appointments of senior managers. 11 of those senior management members appointed did not meet the size requirements, and much of the trend around the filling of these posts could be ascribed to ineffective leadership, lack of knowledge of the prescribed recruitment and selection processes of the public service. All these are very fundamental problems to the areas of human resources. The competency assessment was undertaken by all senior HMS members in the Department. 56 of those members were assessed. And what it has shown is that there are really severe gaps in the proficiency of managers at all levels in the department, particularly the whole area around strategic management. What you found was that a large number of managers, even at your most senior level, were actually operating at an operational level rather than the kind of strategic level that was necessary to introduce some of the interventions so needed to take this department to another level. Obviously, the gaps identified there could be connected through coaching, mentoring, and formal training programs that could be considered to assist this process. In the area of strategic leadership at provincial and local offices, clearly what we observed was that provincial managers were spending inadequate time in the provinces. A substantial amount of their time was actually away from the provinces and at head office rather than at the coal face of service delivery. The job evaluation results of 90 posts of deputy directors were verified, and the outcome of these job evaluation processes have been submitted to the Minister for approval. All vacant and funded posts of immigration officers were identified and advertised by December, and it was also agreed that trainees would assume duty in a staggered manner, since the training facility was not sufficient to train all immigration officers at the same time. This is all new appointees. A draft plan for the devolution of functions and powers to the provincial officers was developed. The plan focuses on the shorter-term devolution aspect of functions and is expected to roll out in a phased approach and to take into account the readiness of the different provincial offices. The strategic planning for the period 2007-2008, I'm sure this is going to be an area that the portfolio committee will particularly be interested in. What I can say is that the department did start planning for this early in November 2006. So much time, effort, and dedication has been dedicated to this project. And I'm quite sure that the strategic plan that will be presented to this portfolio committee will be a much more beefed-up plan than previous year, and obviously it would take into account the recommendations coming out of this intervention. The organizational model of the department has been reviewed. The minister has spoken to some degree about the need to assess the configuration of the department, but also the organizational model of the department, and some attention has been given to this area. The leadership and management capacity, if you look at some of the strategic considerations and recommendations, without a doubt, as the minister has indicated, there needs to be the appointment of a DG as urgently as possible to address the current service delivery challenges. We think that a DG coming into Home Affairs should be appointed on at least a contract of 5 years, because if you give some of the systemic challenges within this department, you need somebody to be there for a much longer time to not only ensure that the processes happen, but to ensure that implementation takes place and a sustainable program of action is institutionalized within the department. Such a director general, we believe, does not need to be a visionary. You really need to be a hands-on manager, a transformational leader, and an excellent administrator. Because if you look at the management and organizational challenges within the department, it's really about how you drive these to bring about the desired results. And we will comment on some of the projects that we were able to drive, which actually substantiate the recommendation that we make here as the team. However, we also really aware that no matter how strong the Director General you get, he or she will need to be supported by a strong management team. And if you look at the results of the competency assessment that was undertaken, clearly the current team would need to be beefed up considerably to give this new incumbent the necessary support that will be needed to drive what is required in the department. Leaving the selection and recruitment to the current management team may not attract the candidates needed to fill the strategic gap in the department in terms of some of the senior positions that are vacant. What you would need to ensure is that the kind of panel you have has the ability to attract strategic people to the department. The performance management of SLS members, I think the department has already begun to display a real compliance and culture at the beginning of the culture of performance management. SLS members have signed their performance management agreement, their performance agreement. I think the real challenge will be, we'll be finishing a financial year, we're about to begin a new financial year. Will, for example, the 30th of April 2007, see a situation where every single manager in all the things has signed the performance agreement? I think that will be the change. They've done it for 2005, 2006. Will you see the culture permeate into the next financial year? Strengthening the strategic management process. As I've indicated, the approach to developing the strategic plan has already been defined, and this has commenced in November 2006. The annual strategic planning process should begin with a review of strategic objectives of the five-year outlook. In the session in November 2006, the department already started looking at these areas. There obviously needs a regular system of regular monitoring and reporting of progress against the management plan in order for these to be implemented. The review of the departmental budget structure, saying that the establishment of a separate budget program for each of the three programs is needed. This will ensure better planning and accountability for spending in each of the branches. The current situation is that the budget is basically under one program. Therefore, if you have a situation, I'm talking about the budget in terms of the core business, not in terms of the administration aspect. And therefore, if you have a situation, for example, if your BDG National Immigration Branch has not spent his or her budget by September, all the CFO will do will then shift this to the DDG of Civic Services, for example, and make sure that the budget is spent in that particular area, and thereby allowing senior managers to abdicate their responsibility in relation to budget spend. So we say if you have a separate budget program for the three different programs, you should get not only better accountability, but also better planning as well. There wouldn't be an unnecessary violence of huge amounts taking place within the department. The reconfiguration of Home Affairs, as you know, it is currently composed of two line functions, and both these functions are fairly specialized and diverse, and require unique sets of policies, strategic approaches, and distinctive organizational arrangements. They also face different service delivery challenges. And as a result, such diversity places a heavy burden on the overall management of the department. And I think this is something that sometimes, if we look from the outside in, we actually lose sight of this aspect of Home Affairs and the burden that is placed on management in a department like Home Affairs. What is really needed is for the Home Affairs portfolio to be reconfigured. However, we didn't have sufficient time to do an extensive study into this area, and therefore we're proposing a functional analysis should be conducted to determine whether our view in this particular area is substantiated and whether the department should move into a situation where you have two different but fully fledged functions falling under one ministry. The review of the organizational structure, the current organizational structure does not enable the department to deliver on its core responsibilities and to adequately address the need for improving both horizontal and vertical reporting. The review of the department's organizational structure should be completed as an interim measure. So what we're really proposing is review the current organizational structure, allow for certain tweaking, but in the longer run, really look at and investigate the possible reconfiguration of the Department of Home Affairs. Improving internal and external communication, this is an area which the department hasn't managed very adequately. And the importance of internal communication, it allows as an effective tool to build morale of staff, to infuse a particular culture into the department, and also to popularize the departmental programs and policies amongst its employees. They need to understand what their vision is to really get the kind of commitment and dedication that you want to get out of officials. Effective external communication was also lacking, in that most reports in the media about the department are negative and sometimes even inaccurate. The department should really conduct a thorough analysis of its communication challenges, and they should develop a communication strategy which addresses both internal and external communication needs. Obviously, the instilling of a culture of compliance needs to happen. There has been an unhealthy culture of non-compliance. I've given you examples of the financial disclosure form. I've also mentioned the signing of performance agreements. And clearly, the department must internalize a culture of governance, ethics, and compliance across the OGP department. If you look at the area of monitoring and evaluation, this is obviously a glaring weakness in the operations of the department, in that there is not a sufficient internal monitoring system within the department. And this kind of monitoring is necessary if you want to rely, if you want to have reliable information and up-to-date management information for decision-making purposes. External monitoring and evaluation of the department's performance could also be conducted in the form of a peer review. This could avoid crisis management intervention and contribute to early warning signals to problems arising. It also will assist a director general in terms of support and assistance within the framework of a peer review of his and her colleagues. The implementation of recommendations made in most support interventions, and we're not only talking about this, most support interventions are often not checked. That has been the experience of the Public Service Commission. And we say that in the case of the Home Affairs intervention, there's a need for strong monitoring to measure progress on the implementation of the recommendations. The Public Service Commission has already developed this monitoring tool, and the department in reporting will have to report against such tools. The human resources observation. This is clearly one of the weakest links within the department. Senior managers tend to work at a very operational level, and they definitely lack a coherent and strategic approach to human resource management in the department. There's a lack of a strategic integrated approach and no cogent HR plan exists. The corporate services branch is failing to ensure that regulatory requirements are met and managers continue to disregard or are ignorant of human resource prescripts and practices. Line function managers definitely need to play a more active role in determining future HR requirements. And as we've seen with the immigration, the imminent immigration strike in last year, the department does not have a good track record with engagement with its unions. And unions at that time in last year while we were there appeared to have lost confidence in the ability of the department to meet its undertaking. This is obviously an area and a relationship that the department will have to work on. Progress against the work plan, I think what we've managed to do, we've looked at the recruitment and selection policy, I've identified various shortcomings, and we've made recommendations to ensure that inconsistencies are dealt with. An action plan to fast-track the filling of all SMS posts has been developed. However, progress on the implementation of this action plan has been slow, and this is due to a number of reasons, such as the unavailability of panel members and outstanding job evaluation results. Internal training on budgetary and code of conduct has commenced within the department, and I think one real achievement for the department has been the development of unit standards for a suite of specialist qualifications for the occupational class of immigration officer. The department should use this plan that was used to develop this unit standard and apply this here to officials in terms of the civic services branches as well. Typically in analysis, a full report has been conducted on this and recommendations have also been made to the minister around the area of immigration. I think we've given extensive coverage around immigration officers when we did come before you previously, so I'm not going to go into that except to say that job evaluation of the jobs of immigration officers for salaries level 1 to 12 was conducted and verified in relation to all posts of immigration officers at that level. Currently, the department is undertaking a staff headcount. The tendering process is underway to invite an external service provider to assist with this process. And likewise, the conducting of the field audit will also commence in this year. If you look at the strategic considerations, clearly there needs to be a reorganization of the corporate services branch in order to ensure that organizational improvement becomes a critical driver in ensuring that the department is focused on delivering in terms of its core business objectives and enhancing its services. There definitely needs to be a more structured approach to training and development. And the area of dealing with grievances lodged with employees, this is an area that must be given attention to. As if you continue to have a group of dissatisfied employees within the department, this will be articulated in terms of the service delivery that they offer to the public. Around the area of integrity, accountability and anti-corruption, as we know, corruption in the department has emerged as a persistent challenge. As the focus on counter-corruption remains vital to deal with the surge of corruption in the department. However, there is also a need for a stronger, proactive approach in the building of integrity systems. The department should implement an internal program that is dedicated to building ethics and accountability among staff. And the recruitment and selection process in the department, Chair, I think you have mentioned the exceptionally high vacancy rate that persists. Clearly, the department needs capacity to conduct the screening and preliminary shortlisting of such large number of vacant posts, and the assistance of an external service provider could assist in this process. However, should an external service provider come on board, there's a duty to manage the service level agreements rigorously so to ensure that what the service provider has been contracted to do actually is carried out. In terms of information technology management, as we've mentioned, the IT projects, the organizational impact of IT projects needs to be much more integrated. IT projects have to reshape and facilitate the quick flow of information, but also that heads of branches need to champion change processes in their units, and really not just expect the IS branch to do so on their own. There is also, however, a lack of common understanding at all levels about how ICT will serve as an enabler for organizational improvement and process innovation. Spending on information services has not yet resulted in a coherent system that is ensuring greater efficiency and effectiveness within the department. And line function managers are beginning to realize they need to take more responsibility for systems development projects pertaining to transformation initiatives within the branch. Currently, the IS branch is over-dependent on the services of external ICT consultants, and the branch lacks the necessary internal ICT capacity. The progress that was made against the work plan is the management of information and communication technology. This was assessed. Certain concerns were raised during the assessment. Among these were that the lack of a coherent and strategic approach to the use of ICT. There was also an absence of a consolidated and sequential ICT system implementation plan to support the strategic business case of the department. And what ensued was we conducted a meeting, or we held a meeting with CETA to discuss the findings of this assessment. We did accept that the assessment was a very preliminary
preliminary investigation into the issue, and therefore the kind of support that CETA could offer in terms of a much more in-depth assessment was recognized and discussed, and it was agreed that CETA should collaborate with the department early in 2007 to develop terms of reference for a much more fuller and more extensive assessment. It was also decided that CETA should fast-track the development of an interim check-and-trace system for identity documents. There was, in this committee, some discussion around the relationship between CETA and the department. The intervention team had discussions with parties around this, and by and large, the parties, both CETA and the department, have confirmed that their relationship is healthy and effective. However, I do accept that at the time that we appeared before the portfolio committee seemed somewhat unhappy with that explanation and felt the situation wasn't necessarily as presented. The development of a coherent ICT strategy, what we're proposing is a committee of experts, either internal or external to government, should be appointed to advise the minister at a high level on the future strategic ICT approach. And this should really go beyond 10 years. If you look at the amount of money that is spent on IT in the department, we cannot have a strategic plan that are only covering 1 to 2 years. The cost to the department is great, and its impact on service delivery is even huge. And what is really needed is a much long-term view around the ICT challenges facing the department. The ICT branch also needs to follow up progress around its master information system. And as I said, CETA should be requested to assist in facilitating the conducting of such an audit. The issue around the cabling and connectivity of all Home Affairs offices in the country needs to happen speedily if it is going to address some of the service delivery complaints from the public, and of course the development of an interim check and trace system must happen. The filling of vacancies in the information services branch, what is needed here is either CETA or another ICT expert should be approached to assist the department in the filling of these vacant posts, as the department cannot afford to make wrong appointments to address the challenges facing actually ICT area. At the same time, the GSO should not only be a good strategist, but should also be able to translate strategy into clear implementation plans. What must be avoided is that the incumbent must not be an all-powerful expert in IT to the extent that it intimidates other managers and therefore they abdicate their responsibility information services. That is by and large what we saw. Managers left decisions to the IT branch rather than articulating what were the solutions they needed for their business processes. The department should also consider the establishment of a separate budget program for information services, and this would hopefully improve transparency and accountability in the use of funds. In the area of service delivery, there is a lack of coordinated framework for standard operating procedures. Get Office does not analyze and follow up on the huge volumes of statistics and reports submitted by provinces every month. If you analyze some of these reports, then you'd be quite amazed as to the kind of information you can get from these reports and how these reports can influence decision making to bring about some real changes within the processes, within management processes. The delivery of civil services continues to be plagued by a broad range of serious challenges. There's over-centralization of functions in head office, inadequate management, fragmented and outdated business processes, outdated ICT, inadequate mechanisms to control fraud and corruption, low staff morale and poor work ethic, as well as poor customer management and customer care. Although the department is making some progress with the development of a transformation strategy for the civic services function, much stronger transformational leadership and urgency to drive the process is required. The National Immigration Branch needs to develop a comprehensive program for implementing the Immigration Act. The introduction of a process of regular quarterly reviews of the performance of the department against its annual strategic and business plan has commenced within the department and is definitely, in our view, assisting managers across the department to develop a better understanding of the strategic priorities and service delivery challenges facing the department. The lack of a rigorous monitoring and evaluation system, and such a system should provide our management information for decision making. However, in the absence of such a system, this continues to hamper the adoption of a much more proactive approach to identifying blockages in the service delivery chain. The digital transformation framework for public services has been finalized. In addition to the draft transformation plan, the following was included: determining the linkages between various projects that are currently underway in the department, the identification of further interventions which are required to transform civic services, and the development of a schedule that will assist in the overall coordination of the various projects and sub-projects. The processing of applications for permits, recommendations aimed at achieving uniformity in the processing of applications and improving leadership and management of the immigration processes has been made. I think this is an example clearly which will indicate that if you have a hands-on management within the department, you're sitting with a groundswell of dedicated officials that know their work, and if they're driven in the right direction, will obviously then meet some of the challenges of the department. For example, when the intervention team came in, there were 13,000 some odd permanent residence applications, a backlog of about 13,000, and I just can't remember the exact amount, but it's over 13,000. We did a hands-on, determined, dedicated drive, and really within the space of just over 35 days, those 13,000 permanent residence applications were clear. And this was done with officials of the Department of Home Affairs. It just had hands-on leadership that was driving them and directing them in order to meet these outcomes. And I'm quite convinced if you have that kind of involvement by leadership with your junior level within the department, you could get these kind of successes within the department, without a doubt. I think that example really makes the point in relation to hands-on and transformational leadership within the department. Development of interim solutions for service delivery challenges. Up until recently, the department has been focusing strongly on the development of longer-term ICT solutions to its service delivery and internal operational challenges, and in the process, it has failed to give adequate attention to the need to relieve bottlenecks and growing service delivery demands, including backlogs that the department is faced with. In the short term, it needs to take the following steps. It really needs to shorten its turnaround time for the processing of applications, for IDs, and such documents. It needs to develop standard operating procedures and norms and standards that can be applied across all the regions. One of the greatest challenges currently facing the department, because it doesn't have the standard operating procedures, you get inconsistent dealing with matters depending which office you're dealing with in which part of the country. And really my view is, it may sound simplistic, but if you really have standard operating procedures and norms, and if these are consistently applied, you won't get the kind of discrepancies that you're seeing and the almost imbalance around customer service that comes across the country. There needs to be developed a service delivery improvement plan that focuses on the improvement of priority services, and of course, we need to improve customer relationships. As long as the department doesn't spend much effort around its interface between the public and itself, people continue to get kind of the negative reporting. They will continue to get a perception that abounds that this department is not doing what it's supposed to do. And it really needs to change. It really needs to change its customer relationship to ensure that it kind of not only gets the results, but it must reduce the kind of negative perception. Because you will also find out that the difference between some of the reality that is happening out there and the perception of what is really happening, there are some really huge gaps. Because there are areas where the department is doing what it should be doing, but because it has a bad reputation in other areas, it has been painted with the same brush across the department. And there are areas that are basically performing at the level that you would want to be performing. The implementation of a differentiated services approach, I think this is what we say in relation. When you're a customer of Home Affairs, you don't always come for the same issue. Somebody will come for an identity document. Somebody will come for a permanent residence. And therefore, the department needs to understand the various cohorts of customers and needs to then package its services in a way that it addresses the different needs of its different cohorts of customers. The management of programs and projects, I think managers need to become much more involved in this particular area. It is not sufficient to put in place an action plan. It is not sufficient to put in place a project or an implementation plan if you're not going to actually drive the implementation plan and if you're not going to monitor and evaluate it. As the ministers have said, interventions have come into the department. Plans have been put there. If you really look at where have been the weaknesses, it's not that these intervention teams have not come out with fairly sound reports. I think the weakness has really been about how do you articulate these reports into a program of action that is driven and that is monitored continuously and consistently. The PAs or managers must fully respect their program and project management responsibilities to facilitate accountability for implementing key turnaround programs. And what I want to suggest is not sufficient to just scrutinize and interrogate the strategic plan. I think what also needs to be interrogated together with the strategic plan is whether the performance agreements of these managers articulate what is in the strategic plan. That kind of alignment must take place. Delegation of responsibilities to regions. Responsibilities for approval have in the past been centralized with head office, even though the bulk of services are provided in the region. This in itself has led to slow turnaround times and also inconvenience to customers. But I think this must also be balanced with the fact that there needs to be readiness and capacity to handle the responsibility. So it's not just sufficient to say, let's decentralize and let's send it out to the region. What you need to ensure is to do this in a responsible way. You need to ensure that the readiness and capacity of the region are done in order to receive such generation. Dealing with the service delivery backlog, I think the efforts of the team have shown that it is possible to effectively deal with such backlog. I think the real challenge is, once you've gotten rid of such backlog, how do you ensure that they don't reoccur? How do you ensure that you're actually then dealing on a day-to-day basis with new applications that are coming and you're not having a series of backlogs mounting and a year from now somebody else has to come in to assist with that kind of backlog? I think these are the kind of challenges that the department will face going forward. And I think maybe in conclusion, just recapping some of the key issues. Together with the report is an action plan on the implementation of the recommendations in the final report, and this will also serve as a monitoring mechanism for the department to ensure, to keep track of its improvements and of its successes in the different areas. I mean, the urgent consideration must be given to the appointment of the DG. The recruitment drive should be initiated to fill current senior management vacancies bearing in mind what we said about the ability of the current team to be able to do their currently. Senior managers in the department must be held accountable for the effective implementation of performance management systems. The review of the organizational structure should be completed as soon as possible. The department should fast-track the implementation of short-term initiatives. Connectivity to all offices must happen. Interim check and trace should be rolled out. Monitoring and evaluation capacity must be established within the department. This will assist the department to ensure up-to-date management information and improve decision-making processes within the department. A comprehensive audit must be conducted of ICT, and definitely the longer-term ICT strategy must be developed with the assistance, I believe, of a committee of experts. The current team within the department will not necessarily achieve this. The final report also shows that of the issues we set out to do as a support intervention team, 90% of these initiatives were completed by December. We are quite confident that those initiatives that have not been completed, we have provided sufficient guidance and assistance so that the department is in a position to take the processes forward. I think what I'm left saying is that without a doubt, we must thank the officials within the department for their assistance, their hard work and dedication. And I think they really prove that there is a groundswell of officials within this department that are really committed to see a turnaround within the department. And we were fortunate to work with a number of these officials that put their shoulder to the wheel and showed some amazing results in the different areas that we work in. And lastly, Chair, although it was a very difficult time for both the department and the support intervention team, I think it was also a very rewarding time. It was lots of learning to place. Definitely from our side, we learned a lot in terms of interaction with such a huge department, with such huge responsibilities, and that obviously definitely interfaces with the report, with the public at such a direct level. Thank you. I'm going to hand over to the Accountant General.
Thank the Chair, the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the Honourable Members of the Committee. Thanks, Odette. I will try and make sure that the members of the committee don't have to listen for far too long anymore, because Odette has covered quite extensively a number of the issues. And in this case of this nature, even if the specific function is different or the specific focus area is different to the other, there will be overlap. There's human beings running all of these processes, and therefore some of the things do overlap. Before I start with the presentation, I just want to quickly take the committee through the approach that we adopted from the financial management point of view. One, you will recall that when the investigation was called for by the minister, that was exactly at the time when the regularity audit in terms of the prison was beginning. Immediately, I think within a matter of 2 weeks from that time, the team led by Odette and the DG of DPSA also was in the department doing some work on this investigation. We then took the view that, one, the regularity audit is absolutely relevant for financial management purposes in terms of the investigation. So we'll use that as part and parcel of the work that will be contributing to the report. But at the same time, the reason why the department called for the support was because the department is struggling to do the things that it's supposed to be doing. Therefore, you did not want to choke the department. There are various teams coming to the department that has to do the normal day-to-day work. There's auditors doing the audit, and there's two or three teams asking different questions. And therefore, you had to take an investigation to allow for the normal day-to-day work of the department to continue. So most part of the financial management investigation only started after the regularity audit in particular was finished. But other support initiatives that are taking place during that time. But also we needed to make sure that our team has got the right attitude so that they can solicit sufficient support from the department, and therefore we made it crystal clear to the team that was doing the financial investigation that this is an investigation by Home Affairs. It may well be led by OPSB and the Treasury and GPSA, but it is an investigation that has been called for by Home Affairs, and therefore we need to recognize that in the process of doing the work that you're doing. So that's what broadly guided what we had to do in the department. Now, in the process of doing what we did, we then identified the various areas that we needed to work on. And then we said, how do we benchmark whatever we pick up at Home Affairs and say, yes, ABCD is happening, but it's out of sync with what should be happening. We therefore, at the very beginning, worked out an internal control environment model that we said, if Home Affairs was operating efficiently, these things should be in place. And work that detail and agree with management that, do you all agree that if you are running this department efficiently, these are the things that you should be doing? That was agreed with management right at the beginning. And therefore, everything that we did thereafter was benchmarked on that model that we had agreed. And we had taken best practice from around the world and from around similar organizations in formulating that IT control environment.
In terms of what the work that has been done and completed, the four areas that you see on the slide have been completed.
Revenue and the accounts receivable expenditure with reference to human resource and other management controls there. There's assets that we've dealt with. There's internal auditing that we've dealt with. We are saying on human resource, we did not get management comments on that, but everything that we picked up was obviously factual. We also have in progress, which most of these, in fact, all of these ones that you see there have been finished, with the exception of the information system. We are in the process of interacting with management to clear out all those things that may not be factually the findings that we have. And I'll make an example why we have to follow that due process. If, for instance, you were to come to a conclusion that says that in Home Affairs and HR, they do not have settlement agreements that are signed in time. And I'm making this as an example to illustrate the point of due process. You would then make that finding and then go and check it. Say, for instance, these have to be deposited with it. Maybe we can use the funds for financial interest. Maybe that would be easier. If you were to say that they don't do that, and that's the finding that you found, and then you go to PSC and check if there are forms from Home Affairs, and you find that there are forms from Home Affairs and they were received in time, you might have found a situation where they were not properly filed in Home Affairs. And the official that you dealt with didn't know that these things were filed in a different place. And you make the conclusion, only to find that when you issue the report, management comes and says, but we've got these things, we can check with Public Service Commission that these things are there. So due process helps clear those things so that when you issue the report is factual and it cannot be disputed. So that's part of the reason why some of the reports, we have them already, but we have to go through that process with management so that we clear out those issues. So the other areas that you see there that are written as in progress, with the exception of information systems, where there's still a bit more work that needs to be done, those that have been done, and the reports are in the process of being discussed with management to finalize those. Now, what have we found out in the process of this investigation? You will notice that in the presentation that we have with you, there's additional slides after thank you. Those slides I will talk to, but I decided to talk to 6 slides as a presentation that I present to you. But the detail of what is in those slides, I'm going to talk to you as I talk to this particular slide, which is written over your findings. If we look at the findings that we found out in the four areas that you're reporting on, generally what you find is that the problem can be defined into those five areas. Maybe you could add in each of the seven areas here and there. But it's capacity constraints, it's skill shortage in certain areas, lack of managerial supervision and leadership, policies in certain instances not being there, in certain instances not being properly rolled out, and I will talk to some of the things. And a whole lot of issues that you can term under the term internal control. These are the areas in which if you want to focus what you picked up in the interaction with the department where the problems are. If you think about capacity constraints, the committee asked, insisted on me saying something on the 23rd of August about the problems in the department. I ended up saying, yes, internal auditing does have capacity constraints in terms of warm bodies on the desk. That is a problem. That has been identified, that was already there, the department knew about that. But what are some of the causes that caused this? Because in the manner of doing, in the approach that you've done in doing this investigation, you said, yes, it's one thing to find out what is wrong. It's another thing understanding what causes it. Because in order for you to be able to cure what is wrong, you should know what causes it, and then you can deal with that. So we did a process of understanding the root causes of some of these things. Capacity constraints, what this report already points out, that it takes long to recruit. Why? Because the selection panel that has been seen for the interview is a much bigger panel. And as such, and it requires people in senior level. So to coordinate the diary of these different officials becomes very, very difficult, and then that delays the process of recruiting. And in certain instances, of course, there are cases, maybe even if it's one or two cases, there are cases that take up to 2 years to fail. So that is one of the problems. But there are areas where capacity constraints get used as an excuse. And I mean, most departments will do that when they're in trouble. They will say, yes, we do have a capacity constraint. But we also did in our benchmarking exercise, we also looked at the HR function. And said, for an HR function similar to Home Affairs to operate efficiently, what is the ratio of HR people to the establishment in the organization? How many HR personnel people should service? How many staff members in a department? And we found that it was a ratio of 1 to 100. And based on that, in as far as that function is concerned, you do have a lot of people. If you look at it in one way, in terms of the establishment, you might find that there's about 12% more people in that area, or 34% more people if you look at the approved establishment. So that tells you that in that area of a problem, you need a different intervention. You need possible training, you need possible risk upskilling people and so on, so that they can service the department. But at the same time, and I'm going to jump into one issue here that we picked up, which is about any function that functions in a department is guided by a set of policies. In this area of work, we picked up that in the department you've got three policies that were there at the time. Two of them were not necessarily approved policies, one was an approved policy, but there was, we definitely and certainly picked up, there was certain confusion in terms of which policy was applicable. And now that becomes a problem, because people would do things differently instead of doing things consistently in a similar manner. So you need one set of policies that is approved, and then that is the policy that gets implemented. We did pick up that there are areas where, and I think the competency assessment that was done does confirm this in some regard. There are areas where somebody is in a position, but that person may not necessarily be 100% suited for that position. Financial management skills are specific skills. So, and let me put a qualifier here. You're not going to go out and then say employ people's accounting in everything that gets done. there, because you don't necessarily need that. But there are certain key positions where you need people with specific skills, and then you find that people that are in those positions may not necessarily be 100% suited for that particular position. But the rest of the positions, you don't necessarily need to have those kind of competencies. Any person can actually do the job. So that was one of the areas that is picked up. And again, the recommendations in terms of what needs to be done would speak to what can be done to deal with that particular issue. So there is an area, again an area, where there are skill shortages in various areas, particularly in the region. Lack of managerial supervision. Any department that would have a qualifications consistently from one year to the other, that immediately tells you that there is a problem at the top in terms of the people that are supposed to be dealing with that. PFMA clearly states out the responsibilities in this particular area. And if then you've got repeat qualifications, particularly on the same matter, then it means that there is no follow-up at management level to addressing those particular issues. And I mean, I can go to the various specific examples that you bring up. I think for the purposes of the committee, what's important to note is that there is that problem, and it manifests itself in issues not being addressed consistently over a period of time. When you then set up policies to guide people in terms of the work that they do, obviously those policies have to be understood by the people that are going to implement them. Right? And they have to have the same understanding. Now here in mind, I've got what you picked up when you're looking at the asset management issue in relation to the department. Just to use an example. What you picked up there is that there's a process of determining what assets are needed so that they can then order place and then the department can procure those. And in some area, we had a discussion with the official that was working in this area, and the official gave us a particular exposition in terms of this is how this thing gets done, and so on. We came to the management meeting to then verify the findings of this discussion. And then the management said, no, but that's not how it's supposed to happen. This is how the issue is supposed to happen. And it's not true, that's how it's supposed to happen, but the official had a different understanding. But it wasn't because the official was completely lost. There was a project that the department had run to catch up on the backlog, and the official was participating in that project. And whatever the official did in dealing with that project, then the official thought that this was the process that should be followed. And that's what the official communicated to us during the investigation. That points to a situation where the understanding of the policies and the guidelines that are supposed to be operating to help the department operate efficiently is not understood across the board. Then it points to a situation where, yes, you do have a policy, but you don't have the proper mechanism to roll out the policy. Then we picked up a number of internal controlling witnesses, which obviously the audit report that you've looked at in the past as the committee, you've seen some of those things. We confirmed a whole number of those on revenue management, on depositing regularly, doing reconciliations regularly, and so on. We picked up some of those things. But also, critical in the internal control environment is the existence of policies in various areas. The HR plan was not concluded at the time. There are certain policies that are at a draft stage that are supposed to be policies that should be implemented. So those policies have not yet been finalized, and we're saying those policies must be finalized. There are areas in the implementation of the asset management where the framework that is used by the rest of government is not properly implemented. Again, that impacts on the internal control environment. So those are all of the things that we picked up. And if you then follow, I think Odette spoke about the traveling subsistence issues there, which points to the internal controls, claiming of overtime hours, where there is no consistent and proper supervision of that, and adherence to what the norm should be. There are areas where you pay your employees every time. And again, I do not want to be quoted to be saying that people that should not be paid are being paid, because that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying in this case is that once you've paid people, you then go through a process, and it's in the Treasury regulation, of verifying that those people that you paid, or as you pay, those people that you are paying are people who are employees in the department and so on. And then you sign off on that, take responsibility that you have verified that. That isn't necessarily happening as quickly as it's supposed to happen in the department. That points again to an internal control weakness. A case where somebody may, for instance, a person may resign. Once you resign, you can continue being paid if you're not verifying quickly whether that person is still in the department or not. Whether people who were not supposed to be paid were paid, we did not necessarily check or discover anything like that. But we discover a weakness in an area that could result in that being the outcome. Without reporting you about a lot of these internal controls, because you've seen the audit report and it covers a whole lot of them, I want to just jump into some of the recommendations that you're making. We're saying that the department should consider the use of retired professionals to augment internal skills. You can use this in the accounting environment, you can use this in the operations, and so on. And it's going to be easy to do. It's different from the consultants. You go for consultants, sometimes consultants will also send very same people that you can employ, basically to come and help the department, and then get somebody senior to help them get the experience. So we say maybe that's the route that the department should possibly consider. And there are areas where we have interactions with professional bodies that have got these professional skills, and we have an arrangement there. We are implementing some of these initiatives with some of the departments that we are visiting. Finalize the HR plan and eliminate the bottlenecks in the recruitment process. Obviously, eliminating the bottlenecks in the recruitment process means that you need to review the policy as it stands currently, so that you do not have an elaborate selection panel that is required in terms of the policy. Risk assessment should be reviewed regularly and used in the entire auditing process. That's absolutely critical. They should finalize the outsourcing of the internal audit work. So as part of the identification of the shortages in the internal auditing front, we have already worked out a process and went out on tender with the department on getting additional resources through core sourcing. So there will be people from the department and the service provider that will help the department in providing the internal audit activities. We say that one should develop a comprehensive asset management plan, and that plan must be in line with the asset management framework that was prescribed by National Treasury. And here, what we have in mind is that there are vehicles in the department. You've heard, I think the chair was talking about vehicles that are not maintained and all of those kind of things. That should be addressed through having that asset management plan. That's one of the things that is picked up, and that's one of the things that is recommended to the department that it should be done. The financial management manual, which provides guidance in terms of all of sorts of activities, or that kept on mentioning that you must have standard procedures, you must have standard procedures. And I'm saying these things, what they were doing on their side, what we are doing, do link. And we're saying that the financial management manual that the department was developing should be finalized. At the moment, the manual that is there is not complete. The mechanical controls of overtime management, you can only claim up to 60 hours overtime. You shouldn't be able to claim more than 60 hours maximum. Therefore, yes, the department has a shortage of staff in various areas, and therefore people will only work overtime. But in some of the areas, the more people work overtime, the less efficient they are going to be because they are tired. So it's important that this area is managed, not just from a financial management control point of view, but from an operations point of view, because if people are tired, there's very little that they can do in help of the department in any way. We need to tighten controls on cash registers and the recording of revenue. We need to make sure, I know because I've had several discussions with the minister on this, the minister loses all hair when she thinks about this particular area. This is an area that is absolutely critical, because you need to make sure that when money is received, money gets deposited. When money is received, money is banked, and all of the controls that go with that. When there's cash around, people will always be tempted. So the better the controls there, the better the situation. Develop a receivables policy and implement it. If people owe the department, the money must be paid to the department. I must say that, Chair, this is not necessarily a disease that can affect Home Affairs only. Even other departments where there may not be problems, they do have an issue around collecting the money that are owed. So it's an area that I think across government we need to make sure that there's proper collection procedures for the money that are owed, that are owed to government. And therefore, in the inquiry department, they need to have an internal policy, and that policy needs to be implemented. Reconciliation, whether it's assets, whether it's about the issues of people that are coming in to apply for documents and the document issues and so on, you need to do those reconciliations on a regular basis. And reconciliation must be done on a regular basis, monthly basis at the very least, even more frequent than that in as far as bank reconciliation, to make sure that the controls are tight. Since the control on subsistence claims, you shouldn't have a situation in which somebody comes and claims for an advance for a travel if that person has got two or three other outstanding. So you need a policy there that creates, that puts that cut-off point to say this thing cannot happen if you already have so much money that you haven't accounted for. So that's important, because then it reduces the amount that is owed to the department in this regard. Some of the amounts that may be owed, that may appear to be owed to the government in as far as the travel and subsistence, may actually be money where people need to only submit the vouchers and say, yes, I took 5,000 rand and I traveled to this place, I paid for the hotel, I paid for the taxi and so on and so on. And therefore, once that is accounted for, it gets clear. So you need to make sure that there's a proper way in which that thing is, that part is managed, so that you've got a better understanding of that which is still owed to the department, and then you can follow it up properly. Without having done that, you will not be able to follow up anything, because there's nothing to be worried. You don't have enough information on which to base it. And just as an important one, and an overarching one, management meetings should take all of these recommendations, all of the Auditor General's recommendations from the audit report, all of the internal auditor's recommendations, and follow up on those. Management meetings agenda must have as a standing item what is being done to follow up on these issues, so that there can be a conclusion and resolution of these issues. To the extent that we have a role as Treasury to support, we will support. But management has to take responsibility for ensuring that these issues form part and parcel of the ongoing monitoring within the department. I'm sure the tools that the Public Service Commission has on monitoring would be very, very useful in ensuring that the department has some systematic way in which these issues are being followed up. Chair, I will stop there and say thank you. These, just in a nutshell, are the recommendations that you're making. These are the findings that you've made. And you say this in the presentation that you have. I just decided to focus my discussion on what matters the most, so that the committee has got an understanding of the challenges the department faces. I want to also end up by saying, to echo Odette's words of thanking the officials in the department and everybody concerned, but at the same time, to say that I really admire the minister and the deputy minister for having taken this position of asking another department to come and have a look at the affairs of the department, to help them look at the issues voluntarily. That is absolutely critical, because it helps the process of identifying solutions, it helps the process of implementing those solutions, as opposed to a situation where an intervention of this nature is imposed from outside. Thank you, Chair.
Right, thank you very much for the presentation. The minister just got to be back in the next few minutes. Dear Mr. Chair, I'm not sure where we start. We start with the questions normally. But you see a... Okay, let me know. Jukman, you can start first. Are you going now? Are you sure that you are not sure?
I'm
okay, thank you. Let's start with Jukman, Sandy, and then Prof. Spande, Mama Chivela. Jukman?
Thank you.
Mike, use the mic.
Yeah, thanks for the presentation. I want to focus on one issue that I think speaks to all the reports, and that's the question of leadership and management with reference to the post of DG. Now, in the short summary, the presentation team said that there must be improvements on the security threat to narratives, so that I can characterize that to run in the past. My question is the position of DG. I mean, on the one hand, it's got to focus on management of the past, but also on the other hand, change management. So that can be vital. The department must beef up the question the senior management considered. My question is, if you really look at the issue of managing the department, maybe the income can come in. You need a person who can really have the clout and ability to do the management and the change management. Now, if I look at, the last 9-8 years that I've been here, 40 accounting officers coming in, going, you need somebody, with the statue of Robin Gordon or Maria Ram or somebody who can run that change management, or somebody from the private sector. My question is, maybe, is that maybe a route to go? And maybe the minister or the deputy minister can maybe respond to that. If we want to really change the department, get it up and running, should we maybe look at the private sector as an option if we don't get the person inside the culture? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to thank the presenters for the presentation. I have many questions, but for now I will ask one, and for me the devil lies in the detail. The presentation highlights that the finance and the HR were found to be the weakest links. Now, the presentation also pointed out that 11 persons are appointed in positions that they are not qualified to be holding. My question is, do finance and HR fall into these persons of 11 that's been identified? Are the persons holding the senior management positions of finance and HR qualified to be where they are? If they not, what action is going to be taken against them?
Jefferson, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. Also, I'd like to join my colleagues to thank this marvelous presentation. Right, first, I wanted to congratulate you from the presenters that I understood them, indicating that they also identified the weakness of that in most of the Home Affairs offices, the cables are not, been installed. So I wanted to find out whether is it going to address the issue of the system which are not talking to each other by maybe putting the cables. And then also, somehow, I think from in the human resources, they indicating that amongst other findings, it reflects that there is no consistency in the job profiles prepared for the purpose of advertising and making posts. I think I wanted to find out that with that, maybe if they can assist us about the time frame, because that is the weakness whereby we feel that in terms of service delivery, we are having a terrible shortage of staff. That what must be done and other things, and also the issue of the time frame. That how long can it take? Because we have raised things again. And then, let me put it there, I'm coming.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the wonderful presentation. That is somehow stimulating a person, because really it was always tiring to listen to what is happening, but now it looks like there is great improvement. My question will be on the other part of it, the Honorable member has just covered me by time frame. I just wanted to know, with this 2 years post not heal, and 2 years is a long time, and we've got time frame which the president is setting out for us, and 5 years in office, 2 years you have left with only 3 years, which is not even a full 3 years. So I just want to know what can be done in order for the department not to delay filling posts. Thank you, Shepard.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, well, as much as we could see that most of this problem were as a result of shortages of staff. But maybe at head office. Is this report saying to us the investigation has been done, starting from head office, provincial office, district offices? Is this report saying that it is the finding at all levels in as far as this is concerned? Because of I would imagine that at some offices, people that you might communicate with, they might not give you answers of what you are looking for. So can we be led up to which level did we investigate? Thank you.
I will start first and address some of them, and Odette will address some of these. Maybe starting with the last question. We didn't have all the time to do this investigation, so you can't go to each and every office. And you can't look at each and every activity that takes place in the department. The idea is to identify the problem and what causes the problem and provide solutions to that problem. So what you do, you pick up a sample and you pick up certain offices, but you try and cover, in this particular instance, we did try and cover the national sphere and in some of the regional offices in trying to understand these issues. So what we reflect doesn't just talk about national, it also talks about regional offices. But we would not obviously go to each and every regional office. No, each and every district office. We cover some of those to make sure that we get a picture of what is happening in those offices as well.
Yesterday on the issue of financial management, when we interact with, I think the question is informed by the interaction we had yesterday at Jane. That most of the provincial managers who reported about the non-accessibility of bus to the provinces, that did not in fact a sort of impact a quite negative on the accounting system within the department. It's unfortunate again that we are dealing with slides and recommendations and the details of the report. And before you even respond, maybe, can you tell us when are you going to conclude your watch call? Because the reason I'm asking this is because we have to do the next financial year. And when we give you the money, we added, in fact, on what the minister has made a call on, that we need to get a report on accounting on that disclaimer. The 561 million rand that was raised in the Auditor General's report. We did not touch on that one. And I'm not sure as to at what point are we going to be informed as to now the systems in Home Affairs, when we pass the budget, in the next, sometimes in June, maybe, when it goes to the debate of the department, will be ready as a department. The department will be ready to handle, in fact, the resources that we are going to allocate. But the concern comes after we realize ourselves that there are no systems in place. With the recommendation, who is going to implement this recommendation?
Chair, let me start with the last question again in your discussion. Who is going to implement this recommendation? It has to be the department. But from where I'm sitting as the Attorney General of this country, there's a section in the PMA that says that I need to support the department. But of course, you can support the department if they are willing to be supported. So, some of the recommendations, there will be a joint exercise between my office and the department to implement the recommendation. But that doesn't take away the accountability from the department, which then takes me to the other part of what you are raising, Chair, the 561 million. I think the investigation that we had to do as the task team that was looking at the financial management issue could not have looked at one particular point and focused on that particular point, because we would lose objectivity and would lose the bigger picture of financial management problems that are affecting the department. And therefore, it was important for us to craft our terms of reference in a manner that deals with all of the issues in their entirety. To the extent that there needs to be answers to that 561, I do not think that the investigation would provide an answer specifically to that. It would provide sufficient information that would help you understand some of the dynamics around the 561. But not necessarily specific under the 561, because that is not an investigation that is focusing on the 561. So an answer to that, Chair, respectfully, I think, would have to be solicited from the department when the department comes to present. But information that comes out of this report might be useful in understanding some of the dynamics and raising the questions with the department. So I think that also obviously addresses the issue from the perspective that Professor Mirzahan approved from the honorable member there when he raised the question around whether we went to all of the offices and stuff like that. But the point I think remains. I think in some of the recommendations, both from the recommendations that the finance team has made and the recommendations that the team that dealt with the other broad issues, strategy issues, there's a clear point here that says that reduce the time it takes to employ to put up a selection committee. One way to do that is a specific recommendation. The selection committee, yes, it has to comply with the DPA, with the public service regulation in terms of representativity and so on, but make sure that it's practical and it's workable so that you are able to convene that selection committee quick enough and then you can recruit. That's the thing that can be made to shorten. That can be done to shorten the time. That is no guarantee. I can guarantee if we have to take a look at the various departments, that may not have the same kind of requirements as Home Affairs. They still take time to recruit. Public service has got a problem generally in terms of recruitment. But in as far as eliminating those bottlenecks that are clear and glaring, we have made recommendations in that regard. And I think the department is taking steps to deal with those. I think what that will deal with the issue of connectivity and the integration that the owners on the plane. I think the minister made a very important statement that she will take appropriate corrective action based on the findings on each particular case. So the question around who is qualified to be in which position, I think the executive should deal with that. And the committee should then, if that is not yielding the required results, the committee should raise the question on the results of that from the minister or from the department. But it's important that executive takes that decision and implements some of these things. And then questions get asked in terms of, you've implemented, what is happening? Are you improving your services? Are you not improving your services? That's absolutely critical.
Okay, thanks very much. I think in terms of the stature of the director general that's required I think the minister can comment about it. But I think our criteria around transformational leadership in its very implies that you need somebody that's going to manage the processes within the department, but also has to be an effective change manager or change agent as well. So you're actually looking for that kind of package when all this is done. I mean, some may argue that, why don't you first rather send the change agent in, let the change agent do what he or she needs to do, and then you send in a manager that then takes over the maintenance manager. See, all those processes. You know, there are those kind of options open. But clearly in this particular situation, given the need to fill the director general post, given the kind of turnover you've seen in this post, you want to try and identify somebody who in many ways can address policy requirements. Because maybe in that way you would get the kind of sustainability that has been lacking within the department. But I suppose you could go for an argument that will you really get that passing job of managing the changes in the department and being the kind of change agent that was required. I think in terms of the stature of the director general, only the minister will know for which person will be right for a department in meeting the challenges of the service delivery. In terms of the qualifications, I think my report did not basically say that was all about people not having the right qualifications. I think to some degree it was about the fact that they may not have met the advertising requirements. So I don't have all the specifics in front of me right now to say, you know, doesn't include HR or finance, but I think I want to qualify that it was not just about absence of qualifications, but more issue around not necessarily meeting all the advertised requirements, which may not only be about qualification. Will this report lead to the integration of systems? The directive answer to that is no. However, it goes into the direction that in the short term, what you need is to go for connectivity within all the offices within the department. But obviously in the long term, in terms of the ICT solution to the department, you definitely must go in the direction of integration. And therefore, the view that a one-year strategic plan will bring about that, they were may in itself not need that solution. But I think it points in the direction that at two levels the ICT challenge needs to be experienced. The more immediate challenges that are facing, and obviously the longer term, more sustainable solutions that need to be introduced. I think Freeman to some degree did speak about the filling of posts, and of course if there is a need to reduce the time, both our reports speak to this. But I think even more important, for a department like Home Affairs and the kind of challenges it's facing, it's really more about getting the right person for the right job. Your focus in this stage must really be on quality rather than an unnecessary haste and speed to start filling. Because I think this is what some of those gaps or filling some of the strategic gaps is going to require a much more quality-driven process rather than one that just focuses on a speedy process. Of course, the big one is to ensure the quality driven process within the shortest possible time. That is the one to have. But I think there needs to be that balance taking place. Secondly, the recruitment policy that we looked at tried to address some of the blockages that are adding unnecessarily to the length of time that it's taking to fill. And hopefully if that recruitment policy is approved, then it should help some of the administrative blockages. And I think it should in itself almost immediately start shortening some of the time. So I'm just trying to see which one. And I think around the investigation, it was really saying that all areas have been investigated. I must concur with what Freeman said. What we did is take samples of processes and practices operating across the organization. And sometimes that trail will take us for provincial office, sometimes what I get and for the regional office. But see, honestly and frankly, much of the bias was what are those processes happening at head office and how are they impacting at what is happening at the local level. Thank you, Chair.
There's one question, I think, was issues around time frame. I didn't quite get the time frame for implementing the recommendation. I think both on our report, there are things that are easily implementable immediately, which have been implemented. Some during the investigation, as you pick up issues, you get those things rectified. But others, by their very nature, you require to plan properly and get the relevant people to do it. And it might be premature to, on each one of them, to attach those. Safe to say that we definitely expect that most of those recommendations, if not all of them, would be implemented in the foreseeable future. Definitely, in this year, they would be implemented.
Let me make a follow-up concerning the issue of time frames. You see, Chairperson, I'll make an example. I'm concerned that I raised the issue of time frames about the implementation of this marvelous. The work which we have done. There is an issue which we're facing that in the department, in terms of corruption, there are a lot of cases which are outstanding whereby these people are suspended, but they're still getting salaries. And I wonder whether that salaries they are receiving doesn't make any impact, positive or negative impact, in our budget. Because personally, I foresee that it is very problematic to just continuously giving people salaries while they are occupying even those positions. It means that some of the positions are being occupied while those people are not performing at the same time. So that is my really concern. Because if we you're supposed also to guide us about how do we fast check to make some recommendation, how do we fast check about those processes of those people that must get rid about those cases. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Chair, thank you for giving me the opportunity. I may just perhaps comment. I'm from Scarborough. The reason I'm here is that I have been, in terms of our work plan, I've been dealing with the department now for 3 years, and I want to say I'm very encouraged by what I hear the other afternoon. I think what is critical for us to understand is just a few things. The first thing is I fully support the whole new vision of the sort of director general that is required. I think it's absolutely critical that you don't want a technocrat, you want to manage it. And Minister, I would really appreciate you, even though they say, you know, we mustn't be in a hurry, that position is absolutely key, because you cannot have a ship without a captain. And I think that needs to be attended to then. Also, what has been said here is that person would have to have some sort of backup at senior management level. And maybe that we should then take the advice of the Accountant General, where he says to consider perhaps using professionals who are retired people. In the short term, just to give that capacity or put that capacity there. And then another avenue that you could explore, especially in financial management, is perhaps to go to the private sector accountants and say, look, can't you second some people to us? Even the Auditor General, in fact, has had the staff working for them, the Auditor General's office, at fairly high management levels. We had a young lady working there for about 2 years. Very good. And, I mean, you know, she added a lot of value to the AG's office. So I'm very, very encouraged by this. What I'm even more encouraged about is the fact that you say this is a plan that was put together with the cooperation from Home Office, the staff. Not imposed upon it for them. And that comes to the question that the Council General said, the Home Office have got to implement this plan, not him. And they've got a buy-in, so I think that is really good, and I'm sure that will make it help. And it's just a very simple question. I'm just going to page 9 where you said that you're recommending doing a staff head count. Okay, and the tending practice is already begun. I just wonder whether that should not also include the updating of personnel files. I was in the provincial legislature in Eastern Cape when we started updating the education department's headcount, as it were. I tell you, we found such a mess in those files that, the leave records were out of date. People who resigned would still have files there. So I think that might just be a suggestion that should be done simultaneously. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to just go downstairs. I think I might have to participate in a question, but I'd like to come back again later. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes. Sure.
Thank you, Chief Minister, for letting me remember. The first question of the headcount, the last question she was commenting about. We requested the intervention at the point when it was coming to the department that this headcount should be conducted. And I know that you should get a reason as to whether headcount does not have information about staff which you have. But the issue is, we need to determine whether what is on paper is equal to human bodies, warm bodies in the offices, and where those people are located and what they are doing. So that's the reason for the headcount. And the, together with the headcount is the whole area of skills audit within the department. Because as you say about the Eastern Cape, we need to update those files. Who do we have and where are the people? Because what is there now is the report which suggests that we may be sitting with 90% or 80% of the staff of the department, which is at a very high level. Hence, one of the observations which has been made about inability for us to have managers who are strategic as well. And I must also point out that the issue of corruption, honorable members' money, and the suspensions thereof. It is true that some of the suspensions date back to 2 years ago of staff in provincial offices, regional offices who have been suspended for cases of corruption. But some of the cases are we have a backlog because they are not determined as yet. They are not finalized by the court. So at times it becomes very difficult for the department to take a decision on around issues of firing of person when a person is still being charged in a court of law, because we have to wait for that process to be completed before we can take a decision. But it is true that it is a concern on our side as well as the executive that we have people who are paid salaries but who are not within the system in terms of functioning, but these are people who are suspended. And I must say that it's a problem we are sitting with. On the other hand, we are bearing the consequences for the decision which we took of removal of people in offices when you conduct investigation. Because one of the biggest problems which we had was a situation where you have people identified for engaging in acts of corruption, but then you leave people to continue there. So even as you conduct your investigation, a person is sitting there, and obviously the person is likely to start the investigation. So I must say that it's one of those very, very difficult situations to balance up the department. And just to also comment on the issue of a private sector, because I think I remember raised the question as to whether we would look at the recruitment in the private sector. Yes, it could be that we'll identify a person within the public service, but also the challenge will be for us to go beyond the public service and look at the private sector material, people who have necessary experience and know-how, because the Department of Home Affairs is slightly different from other departments. You need at every minute to have a manager who's going to understand what is happening at the regional office and what the needs of each one of the regional offices is. Now, we are currently looking at who do we get as a DG. and we want to make an undertaking to the portfolio committee that by the time we go to a budget vote, shall be having a DG in the department. And we are hoping that the kind of DG we are going to get will be the DG as described, as presented by the intervention committee. Will be your excellent manager, will be a hands-on manager, but also a strategic kind of person. And lastly, Chair, obviously, as it has been pointed out, we will not, it would be improper of us to just throw in a DG in the kind of situation in which we find ourselves in, with all the challenges which are there. We need somebody who's going to come in there with a team of managers. Now, team of managers is a recommendation which assists us as well, because one of the recommendations which has emerged out of the process is that we could actually go external. We could go external, we could also look within the public service if we can get a team of people to come in and assist and mentor the people we have in home affairs. It could be that you go out and get external people to come in and actually assist us in this process of transformation and restructuring. But the key is going to be that team will have to work together with the DG. The priority is appointment of the DG, so that the DG, whoever comes in, will be working and under the guidance of this DG. And I just thought, Chair, I needed to say that, yes, in terms of time frame, which we have taken to appoint and to do other things, but I also want to present to the portfolio committee that we can be able to come back and present a complete program of action which has been made out of the book. Because we have a program of action, we set time frame, and we have started implementing that program of action.
Yeah, there are some instances where senior managers delegate some of their responsibilities to junior officials and then instruct them to do things that are not supposed to do, knowing very well that when these are going to be detected, they are not going to be held liable because they have not done it. And they have not given those junior officials written instructions. So what measures or mechanisms are you proposing to be put on in place to make sure that this abuse of power comes to an end? And the second one is about the skills audit that we have proposed. Is it only going to be conducted at the HQ or is it going to go down up to the district level? Because there are some districts that people who are hitting the district use metrics without some necessary qualifications. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have two questions. The first one is with regard to the headcount. Now, when is it expected to be completed? And to date, have any ghost employees been identified, or is it too early to say because the personnel and the organizational chart are not tying in? Going back to the weak link in terms of finance and HR, there's constant reference to the department, to the management team. Surely there are specific names. There are names to these bodies that are incompetent, that have brought the department to where it is at the moment. Are these people being protected? Because the minister is referring to corrective measures. Sounds like plastic surgery. You know, are we just going to enhance this or put a band-aid or what? If people are incompetent, you can get the best DG in the world, those people will still be there. Because you undermine a good person coming in. So let's take the bull by the horn and say the investigation has shown that certain persons are incompetent, it's not a witch hunt, and they must now be brought to book. I'd like a comment, Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I want to refer to something by the Accountant General and maybe also we had yesterday the provincial divisions of the department giving us evidence. There was indication by the provincial manager of KZN in KwaZulu-Natal that they have a problem with internal audit as such. You know, it's a risk problem. And I think also the provincial manager of Mpumalanga indicated that for them it's a problematic. They've got only senior administrative offices around a budget of 70 million. Now, my question is, we have the report of the task team. We're going to have a DG in place hopefully soon. Now, in the interim, who takes responsibility for that from the management side, from the top management? We saw as one of the issues, lack of urgency at units to get us, and one of the problems. Who will take the ownership of that to ensure that the ship moves, although it would be sometime for the UDG and his team to come aboard, but who's going to the accountant general's office going to assist there?
I'm sorry, Chairperson, I've got question only one. Chairperson, in under the service delivery, in your own observation, you mentioned about that although the department is making some progress with the development of a transformation strategy for the civil service function, but you said that much stronger transformational leadership. I'm not clear what you mean about how, because it might happen transformation, meaning that, I'm sorry to put it like this way, like in the past we had a problem with transformation whereby some of the sections are really white, or you mean transformation of gender, whatever might be, we need a title from that one.
Curbing the abuse of power. I think Odette will talk about this, but there's a very specific reference in the TFMA in as far as the accounting officer and the minister is concerned. It's on section 64. We already have a precedent there where we say that if the minister requires the accounting officer to do something that may be out of line, the minister may have to do that in writing. So I don't, if any official finds himself in a situation where he ends up being pushed to do things that he shouldn't be doing, if you accept that and you know that it's wrong, you will have very difficult proving in any process that was the case. So the best thing for officials is not to put themselves in that situation. But there's very little any official would have in that instance. I think that's basically the issue there. But internal auditing, who takes responsibility? I said that there is a process to cross-source currently. And obviously, that process to cross-source has to be finalized and so on. The responsibility, Honorable Bergman, is in terms of Section 38 of the PFMA. It is the accounting officer. In the case of an acting accounting officer, it is the acting accounting officer. My responsibility that I get written for is in terms of Section 6 of the PFMA. So I do have a responsibility to assist the department, so I cannot turn my back. So in the department working on this particular issue, trying to increase the capacity of internal auditing, or any department for that matter, I do work with the department to try and resolve this issue. We have been working with internal audit in the department up until now. We will continue doing so. We will try and strengthen that activity to the extent possible. I must have mentioned this in the context of recruiting as well. That you expect the department to do. The government, for various reasons, is finding it difficult now to attract people. Not just some departments, all of the departments. While the economy is growing, there are opportunities in the private sector. So while we put these recommendations, we should be mindful of the fact that it's going to be a big challenge. And this is not a challenge that will be unique to Home Affairs. Now, Home Affairs, having had the history that the unfortunate history that they've had, it makes it that much more difficult to attract people.
So parents, we need to keep that in mind, that these are the challenges that we're going to face. These are the recommendations on the table. These are things that need to be done. Implementing these things is not going to be a walk in the park. It could never have been. Now, thinking about the recruitment in particular, it's going to be very, very difficult. Internal auditors in particular, Honorable Bergman, are very few in the country. There's about 600 professional internal auditors in the country. And everybody needs those people. There's 4,000 or 5,000 odd adults that are registered with the Institute of Internal Auditors. And government needs them, private sector needs them. So it gets very difficult. Part of the solution lies in developing some of this capacity internally. And obviously, as soon as you develop the capacity, you will lose the people again. So it is going to be a continuous challenge. Once you've got a DG that is transformational in the department, possibly there may be some other strategies that will come up overall that will try and supplement some of these initiatives. Hence, we cannot take one recommendation in isolation from the other because they all reinforce each other in terms of their impact and in terms of what they should achieve. There's various recommendations that came out in Odette's presentation that we're saying in certain areas we need to get external capacity to help with certain things. That should help address some of these things. But getting that external capacity could be in different forms. And I think for the committee to realize that particularly the recruitment part is going to be very, very difficult under the current economic environment.
We have received your watchful request that you're refusing to be released for other engagement. I sort of agree. But if you leave, I will be interacting with the department on the annual report and the Auditor General's report, which you just covered. And I'll appreciate by that time the recommendation you have made will have flesh as to what informs those recommendations when we interact with you. In the next day, I think when we come back after recess, we'll put a day for that. So by that time, the report will be ready. With number of questions that will come, that members can reserve them, we can deal with them in the protocol. We therefore thank you very much for your brief presentation, which, as I said, that we'll have to put flesh on it, and then we'll deal with that in the next one. But we thank you very much for the work that you're doing there. Okay. There are still other questions. Did you address in your input, you'll remain alone there, but you're still supported by the minister and the deputy minister here. I have noted your six. I have noted you. We'll come back. Part of what you reported was that the number of reports that you have submitted on other areas that you are focusing on during your intervention, trust him. Therefore, most of the issues that you have raised, no, I should respond. I know that there's still a question. I thought you were raising that. Okay. No, that's fine. I just wanted clarify certain things, so that as we move with this report, we are very clear as to the recommendations that are here. Are recommendations that come from the extract of the number of reports that you have submitted in the position of the minister. Is that correct?
I think to a large degree, some of the findings and the recommendations in the report are informed by other work we've done on the basis of other reports. Yes.
Okay. There are still a few hands, but can we sort of respond on the other round of questions? So Sandy and Sandy and Babuswande. Yeah, I think to reinforce the question that Babuswande raised, Minister, on the question of corruption. In the report, you've not raised the issue very much, because you're not going to investigate particularly corruption, but we're looking at much of the system. But maybe to share with the committee, during your time, have you sort of come across or looked at what caused some of these problems, which lead to this corruption element that you still find in the department? Follow up to that question of what Babuswande raised again, is this question of processing of disciplinary cases. The structure, we informed that there's a structure from head office that moves around provinces and then dealing with these cases. Not all of them are within the court, but some of them are internal what you call a disciplinary, you know, actions that need to be taken, and the manner in which the structure is moving. I think we'll deal with that again, Minister, when we interact with the department in the next round when we discuss the budget. It seems to be quite very slow in addressing some of these problems. That leads to having a number of people who are suspended earning a salary and their kids are not yet dealt with, you know. So have you sort of maybe looked at fast-tracking that process? Or looking at, you know, some of these people are sort of employed in certain positions. They have to sort of leave their positions with their employers and have a program of moving around the country, which impacts again to the positions that they're holding. Maybe the task team is looking to that. You may not want to go into detail, but just to share with the committee to understand the manner in which you've dealt with those issues as you. Because you are at the same time operational. You are not only investigating, you are operational. Therefore, you pick up these issues. The assessment of individual shop management. I would believe that obviously we do have a report that has been submitted, and therefore the manner in which the minister will deal with those issues. We may not want to dictate as a committee, but we will be informed by the minister how to want to deal with the what's called assessment report that we have done, you know, rather than wanting to sort of want to get the details now. But as we move forward, the plan, the plan that will come, strategic plan, will inform us as to how you're going to be sort of dealing with the recommendations, because all these recommendations will have to come in the strategic plan for the year. These are things that we want to achieve. So we have a system to look at that implementation of this watch point. To your direct job, your service person was in operational. Just to reinforce the point that Babuswan has raised. And then from there we'll take Babuskakani and then Babuskakani. I saw another hand so that we are able to round up and come to some conclusion.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I feel like I'm in the hot seat. The council chair, no God. But let me just try and quickly respond to some of the issues. I think one of the issues is what mechanisms are put in place to define the relationship between senior management and junior management. I think there you've got to rely, within the context of the public service, you actually rely on the performance management system, where the senior managers must have clear key performance result areas within their performance agreement, and the junior officials must have clear work plans which outline that what they must do. And in this way, if these things are interrogated very closely, you will ensure that there's no abdication of responsibility where senior managers, in a sense, are dumping everything on junior colleagues and therefore expect them to take not only responsibility but accountability for what is happening. So all of this whole relationship must be underpinned by a very solid performance management system. And I think that's something that the department has a long way towards going. As I've indicated, there are attempts now to ensure, to install a performance management system, but it needs to go at a much faster rate. The skills audit, which is going to be conducted through the Department of Public Service and Administration, is intended to cover the whole department. This is what the minister has requested, and therefore to allow it not only to be as comprehensive as possible, but to ensure that those results will assist in other processes. I think it's very important that the whole department is actually audited. But obviously, I think given the nature of a department like Home Affairs, there will be certain specific categories, occupational categories, that you would want to give deeper attention to. I think that that would respond. In terms of the headcount, as of January, I know that the tender had gone out from the department. I can't say with any great authority as to where it is now. But definitely, we have assisted in drawing up the specifications for such a headcount. And with my last discussion with the relevant chief director who was project managing this process, I was told that in January it had gone out. You say surely there are specific names, etc. I think I'm not so sure if a... if an engagement or fora like this would help any in relation to the release of names. I think what suffers this is that the minister has been given clear reports with recommendations emanating out of that report. She will look at them and decide in what direction to deal with the different recommendations. And stemming out of that, I'm sure she will then inform the committee around certain actions that will be taken. She's already spoken to some of the collective actions, and then some of those collective actions relate to issues of coaching, mentoring, possible deployments, etc. But I think she needs the time to actually study some of these reports. Safe to say at this stage that the report does show that there are serious gaps around certain competency issues. In terms of civic services and what does transformational leadership mean, I think transformational leadership in this sense is really about bringing on board a manager that not only understands the change processes, but how these changes should actually happen. I don't think it's got anything to do with the issue around representativity as such, but transformational leader in the sense that change needs to take place in this department, and those changes that need to take place are in terms of the people, the systems, and the processes. And it's how you as a manager are able to make sure that the change management happens in an integrated way with all of these processes to bring about the results you want. What are the things we saw in relation to perhaps which may support corruption rather than minimize corruption? I think, Chair, that is what you asked. I think for us there were lots of issues where we saw that if the environment is not checked in a particular way, it could be an environment which would encourage particular practices that you would not welcome. I think if you look at the internal weaknesses that we have shown in terms of the financial system as well in the human resource system, if you abuse those kind of systems in a particular way, then you would have a situation where people will then take advantage of it and therefore use your weak internal controls to actually to advantage themselves. The long delays in matters such as recruitment, the delays around the disciplinary process, I think these all send different kinds of messages. The delays around the disciplinary process, and I must agree with the minister, in some cases it's really out of the hands of the department in that they've actually been requested to allow the criminal proceedings to proceed before the actual internal discipline. Well, we can argue, you know, is that necessary? But in some cases, having myself been involved in disciplinary processes, especially in like the Eastern case, for example, you get the security asking that you actually please just put these things on hold because they will undermine the criminal processes. And in that case, the department then is really out of their control to really act on it. But I think what is in their control is when there is transgression, they need to act on those transgressions. And a clear message needs to be sent out that there will be no tolerance. And I think if you send out those kind of messages, you bring about a work environment that starts speaking to a particular value, a particular integrity system, and a particular work ethic. You see, that you can't just only concentrate about catching the crooks as such. Some concentration must be given to how do you actually put a profile in place that is honest, that is integrity driven, that is value driven. And I'm saying not sufficient attention is given to that, they were, to ensure that. On the other hand, also some of the actions within the department is that they can be partisan and inconsistent. And because of such partisan and inconsistent actions, they in themselves send out a particular message which says these kind of inconsistencies can be tolerated and therefore in your little work area you can also employ similar measures. So it's really about a particular culture rather than catching somebody with their hands in the cookie jar, if you will. That's what we have experienced in our interaction with the department. Yeah, Chair, I'm not so sure if I got your last bits of questions, but I think as the Minister had indicated, there is a clear action plan which taking in account all the reports, including the final report, that action plan has taken into account all the findings, but more particularly has focused on the recommendations, and there has been clear time frames as well as responsibilities for when these should happen. And as the Minister has also indicated, the department is already working on some of these issues.
We have no reason and we have no intention to protect people. I think we would not have called for an investigation if it was our intention to cover up what is happening in the department. That's the first thing I need to say. The second issue is, yes, we will take appropriate action at the appropriate time. Because much of the reports were coming in from the intervention task team, but we had to wait for the entire process to be completed, which has not been completed. But also, it could be that some of the you need to also make reference to what is currently going on, the investigations and process within the financial control. And obviously, if you look at the backlog which we have in terms of disciplinary cases, certainly we may require actually external assistance for this kind of to deal with these cases. I mean, we do have Ronald Contempt, who is in the main driving that process. But I'm also aware that there's a process of training of people who will be doing that work, but also a process of recruitment of people to come into that outfit, into that unit, according to the report which I have. So there is no protection of people. But also I also need to that is in the area of transgressions, but in the area of incompetence, I think we need to agree that much as competency assessments have been conducted and the results thereof have been received by us, that the competency tests are not the sole, they are not the determining factor as to only, it's not the only tool which you use in the employment of people in the department. Most of the people you have in the department, including the managers, and I think Odette did raise the matter, the results of the competency test indicate that they may not be operating at a strategic level, but are more operational in their approach to issue. But also, not that they don't have the necessary qualifications, they do have the necessary qualifications. So, obviously, in determining the way forward around some of the issues, we need a combined effort, putting our heads together with other colleagues and other departments and see how we are going to be dealing with all these cases. And some of the cases, I'm certain, are not cases you want to leave to the person who's dealing with the cases, such as Ronald Bond. It, as I say, it could be like DPSA itself may actually have to come in and assist us to deal with some of the cases. The last issue, Chair, I would like to respond to, which has been raised by, is whether the issue raised by Honorable Galian, whether any goes. In fact, only last week we were checking from the department whether that tailoring process has been awarded already and whether the process has been embarked upon. And we discovered that has not happened, but the process of adjudication is currently in place.
determine which company is going to be doing this work. But one of the issues which I raised with the leader of the task, the intervention task team, at the point when they were presenting the report to us, was that there could be areas where we actually needed them to be part of even adjudicating those tenders, such as this one. Because there's an experience of having conducted a headcount in the Eastern Cape. And my view was that it would serve us better if they could assist us, one, to determine who is actually going to conduct this headcount, and even to determine how the headcount is to be conducted. Particularly because it's not just about national, it's also regional extension. So much as the intervention team has completed its work in terms of the terms of reference which we had given to them in December, by December, end of December. But we've also requested them that there are certain areas where we still need them to come in and assist the department to move forward. I did mention, Chairperson, that the issue of external intervention, which is not necessarily from the public sector, it could be from the private sector as well. If I may use the example of France, if you look at where France comes from, and the fact that in 3 years, France has been turned down to what we all see now as a role model. It could be that we are now in the process of interacting with them and see what it is that we can learn, which can assist us to take the department forward. And that is why I'm saying I'm not ruling out the possibility of external people coming in to assist in the process. The key thing for us is we should be able to, one, meet the time frame which we have set for ourselves. And I think that should be the key, and we should be able to meet the time frames which have been set, both for the employment of the DD, employment of management, or even establishment of panels to assist the minister to take forward areas of IT. So that this culture of compliance and adherence to deadlines is inculcated right from the beginning in the actual implementation of the recommendation. So I think that on that note, with regards to this issue, we may be behind because of headcount. We may be behind because the intervention task team did not do it itself up until the time when we had to leave the department. But certainly, we've requested through ODEP that they would have to still assist even in determining finally what's going to happen, even about the company, for that matter. Because you also want people who have the experience who will do the job and deliver that which we have.
Thank you very much. Is Kate followed by Robert Consignment?
Yes, Chairperson, mine is not a question, it's just a comment which has been coming up in my mind all the time. But it has been somehow touched upon as we were talking here. You know, Minister, if there is a feeling or a thought that if we get people from outside or private sector, I'm not saying you say you're going to concentrate on that, but quickly it raises a question that how did we get a person like Odette who has been in the department for so long and has been identified within for so many things. When there is to be an intervention, she's always taken up to do that. At some stage, she went to correctional. At some stage, she went in various departments. To me, it says, since an intervention team has highlighted the weaknesses, so it tells us you need one thing. You can bring somebody from outside, from inside, if
is not going to adhere to the weaknesses that have been highlighted within the department, even that DG, wherever you get him or her, will have that problem. So it says the main thing that should be looked upon is those recommendations, those weaknesses which caused whatever that happened are not adhered to, then there will always be a problem. I have a public service veteran. I was once a public servant, and I know very well, you know, Minister, if you don't have a system that says one day as you work as a public servant, one day you have an opportunity of getting that highest position ever, you become demoralized. So it within the public service, you can get the best DG ever you can get, as long as some people are able to exercise and demonstrate their capacity when they have an exposure. I'm just saying you must be mindful, and I'm sure you are mindful of that, that sometimes you need not even think of going outside, as long as if a person that comes in is able to implement what has been said to be the weaknesses. Because you work with other people, this thing of collective, it helps a lot. I'm just thinking, you as ministers, the president does not do the work, but everything is credited to the president to be doing so well and so forth. It is the full soldiers, the ministers, are doing the job. So what we need is to have a person who will make sure that the administrators, the managers are complying, they are doing their job, and all the credit will go to the DG. I'm just making that type of a remark.
Thank you, Chair. Well, as they were giving us a report here, there was this make mention of a confusion in as far as policies are concerned. There seems to be about three policies in the department. Is it because of the number of or the time spent of some of the top management like DG in a department, if he has been there or if she has been there for 2.5 years, and then they come up with policies and then they hang it, and then you have this employee confused, not knowing exactly which one to take. The time spent of particularly of DGs in those positions, how did it affect the performance of the lower management? Because for me, it seems as if it has also contributed a lot, because of there is a lot of confusion there. And then the other one, it's on the issue of having people, maybe as much as maybe there is an attempt to deal with it, with this thing of having people acting for more than 2 years, 3 years. Do we really say, if ever maybe you have a person who is acting, for instance, like a provincial manager, and have people who are permanently employed at the lower level, are they going to take him seriously? Because of he is acting and they are having full employment with the department. So that in itself, how does it also contribute to what the performance of this managers in their actual work? Thank you.
Welcome,
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I make apology, I'm coming later because I already make apology to the secretary. My friend just arriving now. I'd like to two questions. One question I'd like to ask to the minister. I appreciate this. In the newspaper, anyone is apply for the ID and the passport is take a long time. If you wait a long time, you can direct the contact to the minister office. I think this is a serious issue for the public. Because everybody now thinking, if I can't get my ID, I also see the newspaper for the chairperson, what do you say? For this guy to go to the 5-year jail, yeah, because he make trouble to the official for the our department. Yeah, I just, but clear, I want to know, yeah, because now I'm very happy the minister here today. Yeah. Because everybody say, if I can't get the ID after I apply the ID and the passport over the 6 months, or even over 3 months, then everybody can directly contact to the minister office. Then the second one is, I like asking to the new DG. I think the new DG, because I'm very happy I see the new DG here. Yeah. Well, maybe, yeah, because I saw the surface is twice there, yeah, but I want to know, because it's a presentation there.
We have not yet appointed the new DG. The minister, is dealing with that problem.
But from this presentation, I like to know it's a new DG, but there is a presentation. Yeah. You see, it's, because we changed the new DG appointment for the new DG. Because the last DG is make a resign before the last year, 2 months ago we sit with the minister. Then now it's the lady is new DG.
Charlie, that will change confusion. Charlie, member Wang, sorry, order, member. Member, please, because that will create confusion, and the newspapers that you have to go and write that you're now confirming the new DG.
Okay, I read this one. All right, okay.
No. Okay. The appointment of the new DG, the minister will announce, there is a time frame, sometime in May. DG Odette, she's heading the intervention task team that went to Home Affairs to assist Home Affairs. She's not the DG of Home Affairs. I think we need to clarify that so that they watch for let's just finalize the question. Are we done with questions now? Because we need sort of to come to kind of a conclusion. So that there are no questions, right? We're fine. We also can respond. So
well, I'm just responding to one question, Chairperson, and that is the issue of the contact number. And let me give you a background in the context within which we did. Well, I hear Ms. Gallian, Honorable Gallian saying it doesn't work. It works. It works, and I think there are a number of people who can forward and testify to the fact that it has worked for them to follow up clearly with the department. I need to explain why we decided to do this. We do have a client service number, which you all know. And there were a number of complaints from various people about the number. And therefore, the issue of the capacity of the client services center is an issue which needs the attention as we look at all these recommendations. That's number one. But two, in the Department of Home Affairs, one thing you cannot afford is, as a member of the executive, is to really believe that there will not be queries which are directed to you. There are many, many people who write letters to me, including members of parliament, who approach us, who call me, and it was important for us as we are dealing with all the challenges which we have in the department, that within the ministry itself, we have a unit of people, some of them intense, who are dedicated to responding, not to process in IT, because we can't take over the function of the department. But at least to respond to queries which people are raising around issues in the department. For instance, and I know that people are now abusing the system. It's true that people are abusing because people don't want to go to a queue. So even people will want you to now even do it, like one application, somebody called and said she applied for a passport many years ago. And what the person did not understand is we have a second phase for passport. And when it was checked, it was established that in fact the person has applied for the passport 2 weeks before the call. And when she was challenged, she said, no, sure that I wanted to make sure that this process is accelerated. Okay. So there are people who will abuse that system. But on the other hand, the reality of the situation in the department is such that when people don't get through or don't get joy from the members of the public service, they will come directly to a minister. And it's fine. So we have to create that system within the ministry, which is going to take those queries which people are raising, which will enable me to respond to the queries which are being raised by people, not only telephonically, but also written queries. We receive many letters of people who complain about certain things. And all it takes is somebody from that unit to follow up with the department. And most of the time, you find the fine and you simply follow up and make sure that the officials do what is expected of them by the public. That's all it is. So it's not about processing and taking over the work of the department, but it's for us to be able to know about those things which otherwise we would not be aware of, for purposes of making an intervention to check where the bottlenecks are so that people can render this service, which is expected of them. But as I said, Chair, indeed there's a challenge of the public now abusing those numbers. But you can't run away from it. We have to bear the consequences of having set up that unit within the ministry. But certainly, it cannot be a permanent feature. It can only be a temporary arrangement whilst you are trying to sort out some of your problems and challenges of capacity within the department. So that's the only reason why we set up that that unit. And I think it's important that people should understand the context within which. And it's not the only one. You heard Odette saying what they picked up in the department is that there's been a number of crisis interventions, setting up of taxes and so on. Because you have to respond as the executive authority to people raising concerns within the department. And the only way you can get things going whilst they're sorting out other issues of capacity, other issues of the problem, a shortage of skills, was to get these interventions, some of them on the backlog project, for instance, from tax teams to process the intra-company transfer with money, because as Odette and team moved into the department, they found that we were confronted with this kind of situation, with this particular challenge. So they had to come in and deliver quick wins for the department as well. So there are situations, Chairperson, where it's unavoidable as a member of the executive, because at the end of the day, the buck stops the group. What comes out in the media or anywhere else, it stops to the minister. Even if you have an accounting officer, the person who must stand before you and account and stand in parliament and respond to questions and queries from members of parliament on behalf of the public is the minister and the deputy minister. So you've got to set up systems which are going to, not to cushion you, but to assist you to be able to respond to some of the immediate challenges which are being raised by people.
Thank you.
I just wanted to respond. I've dialed this number 4 times.
Right.
Twice it was disconnected and twice it just rang. So here's my point, Minister. You say it doesn't work, and I told you it doesn't work.
Can we do this parliamentary service? But we, you know, I think the point that the Minister is making is not a permanent thing. Based on the current problems that the call center is having, I think that becomes a priority that that will definitely become a priority that that particular call center is well equipped as a matter of agent. Well, in your strategic objective plan, it must reflect that this is what you are seeking to achieve as a matter of agent
because we would not want to have a situation where already people like Sylvia are now starting to point fingers, but this thing is not, we don't want that. And the minister was not going to walk down sitting on this. That is a good initiative. But in a situation where there are problems, this is what the office has contributed to try and alleviate some of the problem. But it can priority that they resolve the question of the call center and make it work so that members of the public will have to call directly at the watchful at the call center. And then those who want to write, then they can write to the minister and get the response after 3 months from my side. You know, but that needs to be said. Now, in, I think we have sort of arrived at the end of this presentation. It's very clear to me, Minister, that a number of interventions have been sort of dealt with by the watchful ATAS team, which reports, number of reports of yours have been sent to the minister to look at, and that led to what we have today, some of the recommendations. It may not be in detail, but the fact is that some of the issues the minister currently is trying to process, some of the reports that have been sent to the watchful, to the minister. Therefore, in the strategic objective of yours, we'll see that watch call translated into action, which means the more action we're going to see is when we now interact with the department on the watch call, not turnaround strategy generally, but on the strategic objective plan for the year. That this is what we are, it may not be a short term, some of the objectives may be for a long term, some of the recommendations may be for a long term, some of them are the short term recommendations. But in your presentation of the strategic objective of the department, we'll be able to elaborate at those areas. Therefore, the two, I think, presentations, which is the report and the presentation which was done by a DG or that, give us a clear picture of how currently the department is sort of grappling with these issues. So that we'll use this as a tool to interact with the department when we meet with them on the annual report. I think we've managed to arrive at a point where we now have a feel of what is going on in the department. The support that we gave during the budget vote, Charlie, just have an order. You arrived late and I'm trying to conclude these things and you're doing your own small things in the corner there. It's sort of helping us to understand these challenges. Are not small challenges, as we have said before. Therefore, what we'll do is that during the budget process, when we engage the department, it will be good, Minister, to share with the committee how we are going to deal with these challenges as they are put down. I'm not satisfied myself that the team came and left. If, you know, we are to encourage on the position of the committee to say to you that maybe look at extending the work of this committee, of the intervention task team, to spend some time while we are still waiting for the Director General to come in. When he comes in, he arrives at a point where already there's a system. Because, you see, the intervention task team was not only investigating, it was already implementing some of the watch calls. So if they cease to operate at some point with the weaknesses we have identified on top management and at some of the levels of management that are problems, you may find that the whole thing can collapse again until resuscitated when someone comes in. It will be nice when the new DG comes in. He arrives when the machine, you know, is well oiled, it's moving. Then he comes in, he fits into a system that is already working. You know, then to come back and start again his own strategic turnaround plans for the next 10 years and all of that, which will collapse the whole thing. But this is what we wish to see as a committee, maybe Minister, that will definitely, I know that the task team, they have other responsibilities, but we'll want to support you if you have to take that point. We'll want to support you to encourage whoever that decides for the intervention task team to really, even if it's not a big team as it was, but a small team led by those who already have driven, you know, department to the level where we are at. There's a lot of progress that has been made, and people must appreciate that. With the challenges that we have said, that these challenges are not just new challenges, but when you come in, those of you are in Angola, these are things that you have created, therefore you must resign. You must do it off your fault. These things have been there from 1994, some of us have been dealing with this committee. These things have been coming to a point where they are today. Therefore, we appreciate and we support this intervention. These recommendations that are here and other recommendations that we'll still interact with as we move forward will definitely support to have a better Home Affairs. Home Affairs is a nerve of the security of the country. And there is no way that this committee will not support you. We are going to make sure that this committee, this department works. Our oversight work is going to be felt. Our oversight work, every single top manager in that department will feel our oversight. Yourself, Minister, you'll feel our oversight when we call you to come and account on the issues because we believe that we have a responsibility, all of us. Therefore, on that note, members, I want to thank you very much. And I want to thank the intervention task team for the wonderful work that you are doing and continue doing that wonderful work to support our department and the Minister of Home Affairs. So we really thank you very much, and we'll support you, and we'll make sure that this department is up and running with no oversight way, and then we'll make sure that everyone will get on.
Thank you very much for the support which you have given us. We are committed to working with the department, with the portfolio committee, and to cooperate and provide you with information which is required. And I think that what is important is that all of us should find forward movement in the department, in government, because all this is in the interest of the